You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Monday to you. We appreciate you being with us. Arkansas basketball loses to OU over the weekend, 65-62 at Bud Walton Arena. They'll get the week off before they go to Kentucky. I should say they get the midweek off before they go to Kentucky this weekend for an 8 o'clock tip-off at Rupp Arena. We all know we'll talk more about that as the week goes on. Big storyline. Obviously, with John Calipari returning to Lexington, we'll talk today, too, about Razorback baseball. The first scrimmages of the preseason were held over the weekend. I was at all three of them. I'll give you some of my thoughts and some of my takeaways from watching this team. But we start with Anthony Christensen, our basketball reporter, on this Arkansas-OU game Saturday night. We said last week, Anthony, that it feels like if Arkansas is going to win games, they're going to have to win ugly. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened Saturday night. They tried to win ugly.
Yeah, tried to.
But they were just a little too ugly at the end. And so OU wins this 65-62. And this is another game for Arkansas that, yeah, you look at it as a missed opportunity. You look at it very similar, I think, to the way you look at the LSU game a few weeks ago down in Baton Rouge, in that they had their opportunities to win. The other team didn't play out of its mind by any stretch of the imagination. This is just an Arkansas team that is very offensively challenged. And when you've got the ball with 13 seconds left, my thought was, who's going to get the shot? Like who takes the ball here? You know, maybe you know who's going to, you know, the players who are more likely to get the shot, but, without Boogie Fland in the lineup being able to distribute to others, it just really limits what they're able to do, I think. And, you know, whether you think that Nelly Davis got fouled or not there at the end, it was not a very pretty execution of that out-of-bounds play, and I think is really kind of reflective of what's wrong with this team in some ways, that the offense just – it's absent.
Yeah, you get that. Yeah.
I mean, who's the shooter?
Yeah.
Who's the shooter on this team?
You expected it to be Davis.
But it's not.
But it's not.
No, it's
you
not.
Know, he didn't have an efficient game, but it was, you know, he had a season high 18, 5 of 16, though, from the field. Not ideal. Neither is 3 of 11 from 3. Adu Thiro is maybe the guy you want to get the ball, just kind of driving in that situation, I would have thought, just because, I mean, he's the strongest guy going to the rim.
Yeah.
You know, maybe DJ Wagner was open in the corner on that play before Davis attempted that shot. But
I think back to something that Calipari said. This may have been after the Florida game. Correct me if I'm wrong. Was that the game where you two kind of had your back and forth about 2 for 16 on layups?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Florida. So yeah, that's after this game. And he said something that he's having to tell his team is that you can't go in and expect them to call a foul on these layups. You've got to go in strong with it. And I thought back to that quote on that last play where it looked to me more like he just went in expecting the foul to get called. Because a lot of fouls had been called in that game, just like a lot of fouls have been called in the Georgia game. But they're not going to bail him out in that situation, or not everybody is going to bail you out in that situation.
Yeah, I don't think the referees want, especially in a situation like that, one-point game, 12.7 seconds or whatever it was to go, I don't think the referees want to make a call in that situation just because they don't want to be the ones who decide the outcome, which obviously you got to make the free throws if they do end up making the call, but still. So yeah, they also, I think, went 2 for 16. I think it was 6 for 16 on layups in this game. Mm-hmm. So it kind of harkens back to that point he made against Florida, where it was like, you need to go in and, yeah, you're going to have contact. You're going to get fouled at different points, but you have to go through and be strong through the contact and actually get a good shot up, because they're not going to call everything, especially in the SEC with how physical it is. So you get that. You get, you know, trying to play this, I don't want to say ugly, but like, you know.
Well, it ain't pretty.
This decidedly unpretty basketball game. You get that. You try to muck it up a little bit, and you have some success. I mean, you hold Oklahoma without a made three-pointer in the second half. Obviously, you foul two three-point shooters, and that ties the game. But they don't hit a three in the second half, so you get that, but you need to, you know, fight through that contact, I guess, and that just didn't happen. So we're looking at an Arkansas team that's 1-6 headed to Kentucky this weekend. Obviously, it doesn't get any easier with that, even though Kentucky's dropped two games in a row. Still, it didn't look as good against Vanderbilt as it did against Alabama, but, you know, it's still, I imagine, a top 15 team in the AP poll today, top 20 in, or top 22 in KenPom. I had Kentucky 10 in my AP poll because I still think Kentucky's, you know, one of the nation's best teams. But, you know, you look at the opportunities they've got coming up at Texas, and then they host Alabama.
There's a good chance they're going to be, I think there's a good chance they're going to be 1-9.
There is.
They play at Kentucky, at Texas, Alabama at Bud. It would be very surprising to see them win any of those three.
I think the one you circle as the most winnable is at Texas, but still, that's a Texas team that just beat Texas A&M at home and just beat Missouri at home, and you're on the road to play against that Texas team. So there's certainly – Texas is a much better team in its home gym, as most teams typically are. And Texas, I think, has kind of shown that, especially in the last couple of games where, you know, obviously it beat you know, a good Missouri team that had already gone on the road and beaten Florida, and then Texas A&M as well.
This is what John Calipari had to say after the game the other night, a 65-62 loss to Oklahoma.
Execution down the stretch. We did some good stuff, maybe didn't finish it off. But there's a hard-fought game. Had our chances again.
And that's the thing with this team is you go back to every, not every loss. I mean, there have been a couple of blowout losses where they didn't have chances to win at Missouri, Tennessee. But the other losses that they've had this year, you go back and you look at it, well, if this would have happened and this would have happened and this would have happened, maybe you've got a chance at the end. And I think that's I think what maybe the most frustrating thing about this team is that they're not that far off. And even with Boogie Fland, at least against these last two opponents, they haven't been that far off. It's just we haven't seen them very many times this year make the plays that they need to make at the end of the game to win it. You even think about the biggest win that they've got this year, Michigan. Michigan just ran out of time.
Yeah.
If there's another minute on the clock, I don't know that Arkansas beats them.
Yeah, you're probably right about that.
This team is really and this is something that Calipari has really, you know, talked about probably since the TCU game where they couldn't close out that game. It's the inability to close for this team. And at some point you just, you know, you say, well, that's just who they are. They're not going to figure that out.
Yeah, no, it's you get that. You saw it against Michigan. If Michigan has another minute on the clock, that's probably a different outcome. That Michigan team's kind of weird. I still think they're very good, but they got blown out by Purdue. Purdue obviously very good, but they're susceptible to a loss here and there. But you look at, you know, their schedule, and let me pull it up just to make sure I don't miss anything. But the only game you can really think of that they made those plays down the stretch, aside from Michigan, and like we said, if Michigan has another minute, they probably end up winning that game, is Miami. And Miami is horrifyingly bad.
Well, they made plays against Georgia toward the end.
Yes, yeah.
You can't discount that.
Yeah. I was just looking at
the more often than not,
yes,
they haven't.
Correct.
Yeah. LSU, they didn't make the plays.
Yes.
Florida, they didn't make the plays. Ole Miss, they didn't make the plays. The other night against Oklahoma, they didn't make the plays. I mean, it's like I said, it's way more often than not that they.
Yeah.
Like I would be interested to look at, you know, a game that's within 5-10 points. What does Arkansas look like in the last 4 minutes of those games versus what do the opponents look like? And I mean, the record tells you the story.
Yeah.
But I would suspect that the stats would not be very pretty for on Arkansas's end.
Yeah, I think maybe if you apply the Michigan logic to, say, the LSU game, maybe Arkansas pulls that one out just because of how I thought Boogie Fland was really playing well down the stretch in that one and maybe could have gotten them over the line if they had another minute, 2 minutes, especially with how LSU seemed to really kind of want to try to throw the game away in that one. But you are right. Obviously, they didn't make those plays against Oklahoma. They didn't make those plays against, you know, Florida or Ole Miss. Got it to it too late against LSU. So you get into these close games and you need somebody to be the guy who you want to make those plays. And with Boogie Fland now out indefinitely, if not the whole season, you don't really, I don't want to say you don't have that, because they've got guys who have been that in the past, obviously with John L. Davis at Florida Atlantic, but it just hasn't worked to this point in that regard. So do you want that guy to be a Deuthero driving to the basket, as you know he's been very good at doing that throughout the season? Do you want it to be DJ Wagner, who was open for three on that last play, or you want him driving to the rim as he's shown at different times he can do? They need somebody to step up, especially with Boogie Fland out, to I guess step into that role, and I'm not sure who does.
Well, it's in a different role, but I'll tell you who I've noticed that have stepped up since Fland has been out has been Vesic.
Yeah.
10 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 blocks the other night against OU. He's playing hard for this team, and it looks like
18 minutes in the second half.
He's taken some of that criticism. We've been critical of him too, mm-hmm. That he's soft. He can't hold his own physically in the paint. He's taken some of that personally, and you see him playing really hard.
It, yeah, absolutely.
This is what John Calipari had to say about Vesic the other night.
He's in a great frame of mind. He's got a great spirit about him right now. He's taken responsibility, and versus trying to blame anybody, he's taken responsibility, and he's working in practice. He's spending the time you have to spend at this, and it's paying off.
John Calipari on Zvonimir Vesic. There was a funny moment at the end of that game where Calipari stops Vesic and he's talking to him, and you can just see the height differential between the two of them. I mean, Calipari's probably like eye level with the Vesic's belly button or something. I mean, that's how that's how much taller Z is than him. Anyway, and Calipari kind of, straight out just kind of, I won't say he shoved him, but I mean, it almost looked like he was trying to get his attention, and mm-hmm. I don't know if he was like telling him something good or something bad, but anyway, he just puts his hand straight out and hits him like right in the waist. And that's how big of a height differential there is. But he's playing well. I've always thought he played hard. Mm-hmm. I even said it during, I don't know if it was OU or the Florida game, but he went out there and he was playing hard. He was just like a fish out of water. He wasn't, I think it was Florida, he wasn't equipped to play with those types of big men. And quite frankly, he's not going to be equipped in a lot of cases this year. Mm-hmm. He's got to go get in the weight room, and they've got to figure out what they want him to be. Do they want him to be somebody who plays near the basket? Do they want him to be somebody who plays at the wing? I don't know that they figured that out this year. And maybe they're playing him out of position out of necessity. But the whole point being that for him to be physical with the other big men in this league, that's not going to happen this year. But to his credit, he's give a lot of energy. He gives a lot of effort, and that's to be commended.
Yeah, we saw it. I think against Missouri, he had been the only real bright spot of that game. I thought he had a good game in that one, and I thought he played as physical as he could have. He didn't have Josh Gray in there blocking him out, so maybe it's a little bit different when you look at that game in particular. But he's still going up against guys like Mark Mitchell and the other guys Missouri has, and it's. I thought he did pretty well in that. He was okay against Georgia, and then he had another decent game last night. Just in general terms, I thought his distribution was really good. Maybe you want to see him take that space he had on that last play before looking to dish it out. But he certainly kind of come into his own, and maybe some of that also comes down to his ankle problems that he's had throughout the season, just kind of the consistency issues that maybe he's had, and also you mentioned it, just kind of this shifting, I guess, role or place in the team where he's a starter, and now he's not a starter, but he was hurt, but then he was maybe going to start against, I don't remember which SEC game it was it Florida or whatever it was, but he was going to start, but then he was actually questionable, so he didn't start. And then at the start of the season, they didn't want him shooting threes. Now they do want him shooting threes. So
a lot of back and forth.
Yeah, maybe he's just kind of getting stuck in between different places. So he's an interesting case study. I think he's coming into his own in these last few games, and maybe they need him to do that. But you see, just like from the stats, I think you saw that they trusted him. you know, 18 minutes in the second half as opposed to, I think it was 9 in the first. So they went to him in those moments. They went to him in the big moments. They inbounded the ball to him on that last play because I thought they trusted him. So it's an interesting case study. And, you know, where they go from here, you know, is he the guy going forward? You know, who you want to have the ball, you know, not like bringing the ball up the floor, obviously, but do you want him to be the kind of guy who has possession when the game's on the line, and you know that they, at least to some degree, they trust him in that situation?
Well, Dave, you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. Most in-depth source for all Razorback sports analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. We got baseball coverage there right now. Gymnastics beat LSU the other night, when LSU was number 2, the reigning national champion. Track coming up this weekend, big meet this weekend over at Randall Tyson Track Center. Pretty much, I asked who was going to be there, and I was told, name a team. And so it sounds like everybody's going to be in town this week for the Razorback Invitation. You can read about all these different sports on our website, wholehogsports.com. John Calipari was asked after the game the other night about letting go of the rope. Basically, you know, this is the time of the year where if you're not doing well, it's real easy for your players to kind of just lose focus and lose sight of whatever the goals were for the team coming into the season. This is what he had to say about this. This is a little bit of a longer clip. Also includes some insights on the team's shooting struggles.
We could have done that with the other games we lost. We lost 5 in a row, and they didn't let go of the rope. So I think they're fine. They lost one of our best players, and they still didn't let go of the rope. But that's, you know, the pride and the having good kids and, you know, just a little bit better offensively. You know, again, we only have 9 turnovers, guys. We're playing fast. We're doing stuff. We're 9 turnovers. Got to make some more baskets. I thought we took a little – probably a few too many threes. But again, they were all open again. Like, we're missing wide open threes too. And that's just part of it. That happens sometimes. So now you say, was that a good shot? And I'd say you'd have to shoot it. You had to shoot it. Was that a good shot? He had to shoot it. But they're not robots. They're not machines. I've said it many years. I've said the same thing. We played well enough to win. We fought like crazy. We never gave up on the game. 1 error, 2 errors. But, guys, that's going to be this whole year. That's what it's going to be. So you can't – some of the things that you would say, oh, my gosh, why did he do that? Those are the things we can't do.
John Calipari on Arkansas falling to 1-6 in SEC play. It's just safe to say that this is not what he had envisioned for this team. You can say what you want about what you thought as a fan and what you thought they were going to do. But imagine being in that building right now when you put this group together. And that's the, you know, it's the risk you run whenever you assemble a new team in the offseason, mm-hmm. when you have no foundation upon which to build. Yes, there were some players that came over with him from Kentucky. There was some continuity in the coaching staff. But there was no real foundation here at Arkansas for them to build upon. And sometimes you have foundation and you bring in new players and it doesn't work. It happened with him at Kentucky a couple of times mm-hmm. during the one and done era. It happened with Eric Musselman last year. It's just the risk you run whenever there's nothing there from the previous season, really. I know Brazil was there, but it's a totally different story this year. It's the risk you run whenever you try to put together a new team every offseason.
Yeah, and it's just, I guess it's part of what makes roster retention so important in modern college.
Think of the
basketball
teams that are the best right now.
They've all got a good returning.
Auburn,
bunch. Yeah, Auburn, obviously.
Tennessee,
Duke mm-hmm. is kind of an outlier just because obviously they're built around, you know, Cooper Flagg and Con Knipple and, you know, a couple of friends.
And Houston
there too.
Houston. KU played old. Houston a great game the other night. KU, they've got a
Kansas threw that.
They've
game
got a foundation.
A
boy,
times.
That was. I watched that. That
it's
was
like ooh.
I mean, that was a total choke job.
It was
that KU had
yeah.
the other night. I've never seen anything. And then in double overtime, when Houston sent it to the second overtime, it killed
yeah,
Kansas.
It kinda, yeah,
they had no. They had no. They, they rolled over in the second overtime.
Yeah, when you lose a lead like that in the manner in which they did, you kind of figure what's.
But the point
happen.
Being that good teams, KU. I mean, losing to Houston, that didn't make them a bad team.
No,
they're still
no,
a good team. The
not,
good
yeah.
teams have, for the most part, mm-hmm. a really solid foundation of players who
Purdue,
at least
Florida, Iowa State,
have
yeah.
been there for a year or two.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just kind of the blueprint, right? You get old and you stay old, but I think one of the big things that I mentioned, I think leading up to that Tennessee game, is guys getting old together.
Yeah.
That's an important part of it. You get guys like, you know, Zakai Ziegler and, you know, Jemai Meshack, you know, who've developed and grown together and are now, you know, obviously I know Tennessee.
And they can
lost,
teach the new guys the way.
Exactly.
And so, that's what Arkansas doesn't have right now.
Yes. Yeah. So that's a big, it is a big thing. So maybe, you know, when you look ahead to next season, you know, who stays is always going to be a question in modern college basketball, just because of the portal and the draft and everything. Not to say it wasn't a question with the draft, obviously, because of the one-and-done era and everything like that. But, you know, who from this team comes back next season to kind of, I guess, and I'm not writing off the season by any means. Maybe it's still too early
it's
to do
bleak.
That. But it's certainly,
it's
I'm
bleak.
Not saying it looks good.
It's, no. I mean, it's bleak. Anybody,
it's not looking good.
Look, I mean, I understand having optimism. I think I am, you may disagree, I think I'm one of the more optimistic people that I know. Sydney gave me a weird look there when I said that. I'm not optimistic about this team. It's going bad. And
yeah,
I don't know that it's
going
to get any better
this
year.
You could say, like, yeah, they've got opportunities to turn it around. You know, they've got a bunch of quad one games coming up. So, yeah, technically there is still that chance. So you don't want to, you know, throw away everything at this point. But it's not looking good. So, you know, I think you'd start to look at, you know, who from this team is going to come back next season, who is going to go to the draft and stuff like that. And then you kind of build, you know, what do you want the roster to look like? Do you want to run it back kind of with this nine-man rotation experiment again, which I'm not sure that they will. There's a lot of things, yeah.
I am optimistic, by the way, Sydney. I want to tell you, you can subscribe to our podcast, Apple, Spotify, Whole Hog Sports. You can also find us on our YouTube page at Whole Hog Sports, and we post this on our social media page each weekday. Anthony, thanks for being here. This is the only time Anthony will be in studio this week. He's going to be heading up to Lexington, I think, later this afternoon. Going to stop in his hometown of St. Louis on the way there. So we'll talk to him throughout the week, though. When we come back, we'll talk Razorback baseball. But first, a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Ethan Westerman is in studio with me now. Arkansas baseball practices began over the weekend. They had scrimmages Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at Baumwalker Stadium. Abbreviated scrimmages. You don't want to throw your pitchers too much this time of year. On Friday and Saturday, 5.5 innings each day. Yesterday, 4.5 innings in the cold. It was starting to rain a little bit once that one ended up about 2 o'clock yesterday. So they'll be off the field. Well, I mean, they'll be on the field. They'll be doing some work this week, but they won't have another scrimmage, weather permitting, until Friday at Baum. Anytime that there's a scrimmage and they're outside, the public is invited to join. It's always kind of fun to see people out there at the ballpark. A lot of people take advantage of that, Ethan. I know you've been out there to some of them before, those baseball scrimmages. And it's What I like about the baseball team here is, number one, they win. And number two, that there's a lot of access there. And it's just kind of interesting that the team that has the most access is the team that, you know, at least among the ones that get the most coverage, it's the team that wins the most.
Yeah. It is very nice to, like, this past weekend there was a, you know, a day and a, I'd say a day and a half where the weather was actually pretty nice up here, where it was kind of pleasant to be outside. So I think it's just, it's pretty fun, you know, the moment that you start getting those days where it's kind of, you want to be outside anyway, and then the team has a practice, and it's just, yeah, there's another element to, like, everybody's a fan of their favorite team, their favorite, you know, logo that they've grown up supporting. But I think that a lot of people, it just adds another layer to it when you actually feel like, you know, you get that experience in high school where you feel connected to the players and the staff and whatnot because it's free for all. But, you know, the fact that in college it's like a healthy balance of it. Like, of course you're not, like, fans can't just do whatever they want, but there's enough access to where I feel like there's a healthy amount of just, they feel connected to a team.
They do feel very connected.
They feel connected to a team, and they feel like they actually, like, before the season even starts, they can kind of know the players a little bit, even if they don't, you know, personally know them.
When Dave Van Horn got inducted into the UA Sports Hall of Honor back in September, he gave a great speech. If you haven't heard this, go find it. It's on the internet. But he had a point in the speech where he said something along the lines, he goes, and Razorback baseball fans, he goes, I'm not talking about Razorback fans. He goes, I'm talking about Razorback baseball fans. And there's a difference. And there is a difference. I mean, there's this connection that I think the people who are connected to that team, it's a stronger bond than you see with Razorback football or Razorback basketball. At least it is that way, in my opinion. You talked about the weather. When you're at Baum, it depends on if you're in the shadow or not. If you're in the shadow, there's like about a 25-degree difference between one dugout and the other. It's pretty crazy how it works over there. But it was nice on Saturday. Weather wasn't great on Friday or on Sunday. I'll give you some of my thoughts, though, looking at this team this weekend. The big takeaway, I think, is that Kendall Diggs is practicing at first base. This was something that kind of came out of, maybe right field would be the right word to say here, but something that we weren't really anticipating. And when we asked the coaches about it on Friday, they said, yeah, this is something we talked about this week. And, you know, first base, wide open competition that they've got there this spring or this winter, whatever you want to call it, this preseason. And now you add Kendall Diggs into the mix there. And it's, you know, it's interesting to me because I remember at one point I thought he might make a good first baseman. And then they put him in right field, and he played so well in right field that thought really kind of exits your mind. But they're trying to figure out how they can get all their best bats into the lineup. And so him playing first, that might be the way that they do it. We'll see. There's others that are practicing there. I think Rocco Pepi, after, you know, watching him a little bit this weekend, I think that he's a very viable candidate at first base. You know, I think there might be another one or two there as well. But Kendall Diggs at first base is really an interesting development. He went 0-for-2 on Friday, coming back from the labrum tear, the surgery he had back in July. He's told me I'm rusty. Nate Thompson's told me he's rusty. But over the last couple of days, 3-for-5, 3 RBI, a double, a couple of walks, he's starting to look more comfortable with the bat. And I think that's a good sign for this team. And I wrote this weekend. You go back and you look at some of the other Razorbacks who have had labrum tears in just the last few years. Matt Goodhart had it. Jalen Battles had it. Peyton Stovall had it. In all three of those cases, and I don't know if this is something that previews what's to come with Diggs, but in all three of those cases, and some of them played with shoulder injuries, their offensive numbers post-shoulder surgery, way better. And their power numbers were way up. And so I'm interested to see if that happens with Kendall.
I'm curious, too, with that situation because, you know, Kendall's historically, you know, an outfielder as far as, like, you know, what we've seen the past few years. Is this one of those deals where if he does end up taking first base, one of those guys who were in the mix for first base could end up in the outfield?
I don't think so. No,
so you think it's clearing space for more outfielders?
I think that there really are four outfielders who are vying for three spots.
Gotcha.
I think Logan Maxwell is going to be a starter in one of the corner outfield spots. I think Charles Davelin is going to be their starting center fielder. If Diggs is in the outfield, he's going to be in right. If he's not in the outfield, I think it gets Justin Thomas into your lineup. And Thomas is a great athlete, They'll tell you that he's arguably their best defensive center fielder. So Thomas is the one I think that benefits if Diggs ends up at first base or in the DH role. I mean, because that, you know, I mean, that may be an option for him too.
Yeah, so I guess those guys in the first base competition, whoever doesn't, you know, say Diggs does get it, those other guys, but they at that point probably just be battling for being in the DH spot?
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I think the DH spot is going to come, and I don't know that they're going to have an everyday DH. Maybe they do. Maybe they get someone who goes out and they just hit so well that they become the DH every day. I suspect it's probably going to be more like, you know, matchups, platooning, things like that. But I think the DH, the person who plays DH is going to be among that pool of candidates at first base right now.
Gotcha.
That's how I think this is going to go. Dave Van Horn spoke to reporters after Friday's practice. This video is courtesy of KNWA. This is what he had to say about Kendall Diggs playing first base.
Well, it's his non-throwing shoulder, so I already know he can play outfield. Maybe figuring it out. I want to get an offensive first baseman, but at the same time, I'm trying to get another outfielder in the outfield, and like, you know, Thomas maybe. The other two are pretty much won their spots in the fall, but, you know, anything could happen. Just trying to be more athletic and, you know, maybe a couple of the other first basemen didn't hit enough. So just let those guys get some more experience over there. Kendall's played over there before for us, worked out over there, played in some scrimmages, was an infielder in high school. But we didn't talk to him about it until just last week. We just said, hey, I'm going to play you here and there. And he's like, good, whatever you want me to do. And, yeah, that's what's going on.
And that's what you want from one of your leaders. You know, they don't care where they play. They just want to be on the field and help you win.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And I think that Kendall's been around long enough that he knows, you know, it's a team effort to get where you want to go. It's not going to be just one or two guys. And I guess he's just, yeah, and I heard another interview from him just talking about the lineup this year and the bats that they have. And it seems like he's just really, you know, happy with the collective, what he's seeing.
Yeah, and you know, some of them are not hitting as well, or they didn't hit as well this week. I think it was very tough to play. Yeah, I mean, you know, the hitters will say, hey, it was tough on us. The pitchers will say, it was tough on us. When it's cold, it's hard to play baseball. It really is. And so we'll give you some more thoughts on what I've seen here in just a minute. I want to tell you that Bubba Carpenter and Logan Forsyth both are coming to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. You can see them, Bubba, on January 30th and Logan on February 6th at noon at Home 2 Suites in Springdale. That's this Thursday and next Thursday. You can reserve your seat now at OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com for Bubba Carpenter on January 30th and Logan Forsyth on February 6th. If you want to go see Bubba and listen to him talk, you better get your tickets soon because we have to get the head count turned into the caterer very soon. So OzarksTix.com for Bubba Carpenter on January 30th and Logan Forsyth on February 6th at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. Very, very tough conditions, I think, to play Friday and Sunday. And it's not lost on me that Saturday was probably their best offensive day.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the day where it was about 10 degrees, 15 degrees warmer than it was on the other days. The play, or the loudest hit of the weekend was Michael Anderson with about a 418-foot home run to left field. I forget off the top of my head who he hit it against. I think it might have been against Steele Eaves. But Anderson, big right-handed bat. He's in that mix at first base, a transfer from Rhode Island. You know, what I've seen from him, and that wasn't his only big hit that day, also had a big two-run hit in that scrimmage. He's a potential from the right side at DH if he doesn't get onto the field as a first baseman.
Yeah. All I'm hearing is that they have options, which is great. You know,
and they do.
It's a lot of years you go in and you're like, who can – it's like you're trying to find out who can plug a spot. It sounds to me like they're just trying to see who's the best option at spots, which is a good
– What I think gets overlooked about the success that they've had over the last 3-4 years – where they're winning the West every year, they're winning the SEC title a couple of times during that span, they've been to the World Series, they're typically a top, you know, 8 national seed in the tournament. It's the depth of the bench. And I've said this a number of times, 2023, they don't win the when you're in a tight SEC race, every game matters. And I don't know that they win the SEC in 2023 if Reese Robinette doesn't hit a three-run homer against LSU in a pinch hit role.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they win the SEC in 2023 if Hunter Grimes, who rarely ever played, but he gets into a game in left field because of some injuries, if he doesn't throw out a Texas A&M base runner at home in the seventh inning of that game, of a tied game. Like, these are the little moments that really add up in a championship run. And those were two huge moments in that season that came from guys who didn't really have any other moments that year, at least not in conference games. And so that has been the strength of this team. And I think you see that again with this lineup, is that, hey, you get your nine in the field, you know, you get your nine on the, you know, you add your DH, you get that guy into your lineup. But you got four or five others over here who,
yeah,
if you need something, if you need somebody to come in and pinch hit against a left-hander, this might be the guy who can do it, or, you know, whatever the case might be. The depth of this team has been the strength of this team, and I think that that's probably going to be the case again this year.
Yeah. I compare almost everything to basketball, but it's just, you know, whenever you have the team that can, they'll trot out another five on the court, and it doesn't, you don't skip a beat. And I'm not saying that you don't, you know, the first five are in there for a reason. They've earned that spot, and so there might be a slight dip, but not enough to make you just fall off.
Let's put it this way. Dave Van Horn didn't recruit 11.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. If you know what I mean.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that it's just, yeah, whenever you have a team that you know, somebody could step in at any moment and you didn't know that they had that in them, but they did all along, and they were just, there was just somebody else that was occupying that spot. I think that's whenever you have your best teams.
Well, one more quick note on baseball from the weekend. I thought the pitching, for the most part, was pretty good. Not a lot of walks, which walks are something that you see this time of year, especially that first day, 18 strikeouts and just three walks.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those are going to be frontline pitchers. Gabe Gackle had a pretty good day. Gage Wood had a good day. I was really impressed with Parker Coyle. Came in, three strikeouts, 11 strikes and 15 pitches. Christian Fauch, I thought, looked really good. He's probably going to be their closer, their number one closer at the beginning of the year. And so there were some good performances this weekend on the mound. And the fact that you didn't see a lot of walks, I think that's a good sign for a pitching staff, because this is the time of year where you can potentially see a lot of walks. You can read everything that I wrote from the weekend on our website, wholehogsports.com. Just go to our baseball tab, and you'll see all of our scrimmage analysis plus some other stories that we've got written. We got some more planned for you this week leading up to Friday's scrimmage. When we come back, a little bit more discussion about the Razorbacks, but first a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We appreciate you being with us. We'll take and stay on top of all Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app. Get the most complete Razorback coverage in one location. Subscription will give you 20-plus issues to Hogs Illustrated magazine, including our baseball preview that we're finishing up right now, plus complete access to all of our content at wholehogsports.com. Monthly subscriptions begin at $17. You can join at the HogsIllustrated.com/subscribe website or call 479-684-5509 to subscribe to Hogs Illustrated. Again, our baseball preview, always one of our favorite to put together, always one of our most popular, is coming out soon. And if you subscribe now, you'll be able to get that once we mail that out here in the upcoming days. They're doing something special over at baseball right now, Ethan. It's the Best of the Sounds of Baum. This is this website that they put out every late January, early February. I think it's going to publish in the next few days for the 2025 team. But basically what they've done is they have taken what they think are the 16 best walk-up songs, and they have put them in a bracket, and they're going to figure out what was the best walk-up song for the Razorbacks. Now, you know what I'm going to pick here, right? I wrote about this 3 years ago. I wrote a story about how do players pick their walk-up music. And the greatest walk-up, I'm not even going to call it song. I'm going to call it event experience. Because it was an experience.
I know mine.
Scott Hody.
Okay, you're on a different.
I know. Especially 04, 05, when Scott Hody would come to the plate. And they'd play Minnie the Moocher, which is a song, by the way, that was written and recorded in 1931. Talk about staying power. They would play this song, and it's got, you know, it's got the lines in it where it says, Hody, 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 Ho. Scott Hody, it works. And he told me this great story, and I wrote about it on our website a few years ago about just kind of the origins of him coming up with this song. He did not choose it. Someone in the press box just played it one night. And the crowd kind of, you know, they liked it and it stuck. And that was his freshman year. And it kind of became it was something that whenever you went to the game in those years, I think that was one of the, you know, you were looking forward to the moments when Scott Hody would come to the plate. So he's the number one overall seed in this bracket.
Yeah.
Right here, number one.
Well, the number two seed is my favorite.
And I think that from a younger, like people who maybe didn't experience those 04, 05 seasons would say the same thing, which is Kevin Copps.
Yeah, his was so iconic. That whole season.
Can I say something, though, about Kevin Copps? The sure. song that you're referencing is Heat Waves by Glass Animals.
Yeah, and he picked it before it got popular.
But what I'm saying is that was his sixth year at Arkansas. Yeah. Like, for much of his time here, before that, he actually had a better walkout song. Kevin Copps, he played the Bad Boys theme from the show Copps, which was awesome. And it was kind of, I don't know, it was a cool experience. But then he has this song, and he wins the Golden Spikes, and he has the greatest year ever by a college baseball reliever.
The moment that song started playing in Bomb, it was everything is going to be okay.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what it felt like.
And he... Yeah, it's just the fact that he picked this Glass Animal song. Like, this song did not really get popular till the... Like, people... It started picking up popularity throughout the season, like, globally. And he somehow identified this song that was going to become, like, a total hit. And it was his song all year long. It was crazy, and it was iconic, and Kevin Copps had the best year ever. Are we arguing that?
No.
Okay.
No, absolutely not.
I'm about to say, he had the best year ever, and that song was just iconic. I mean, and I think that...
The best year ever by a college baseball reliever. And I don't think you're ever going to see anything like that again.
I've been talking to a lot of my friends recently, because I've noticed just a numbness for a lot of people about, like, Razorback sports in general. Like, just, like, they don't get beat up by, like, the basketball team losing or football anymore. I ask them, like, when was the last time you got your heart ripped out? And they said it was Kevin Copps last game.
The North Carolina State game.
They're like, that is the last time that, like, I had my heart absolutely ripped out by a game.
Yeah, I mean, that was a tough one.
So, anyway, iconic.
Anyway, so they're doing this on their social media, on the Razorback Baseball social media. And so just kind of keep up with this. We hope we're going to have Jimmy Sanchez on our podcast very soon. He's kind of in charge of this at the U of A. He's in charge of the game day experience at Baumwalker Stadium. I've talked before on this podcast about how poor I think the game day experience can be inside Bud Walton. It's interesting because at baseball, I think it's about as good as you'll find a baseball game day experience, and Jimmy is in charge of that, and hopefully we'll talk to him about this. Just kind of how he came up with the idea about this, and he and I talked a lot in the days leading up to them coming out with these songs. It was like, he asked, what songs do you remember? And I spent a lot of time kind of going back through and just, you know, this song, I don't know that it stood out to anybody else, but I always noticed it. You know, I mean, those types of things.
They always do. They do the Sounds of Bogle too at some point, and theirs are always pitchers are always the most iconic. I think that I just have a thing for a pitcher's song because it's usually the, you know, it just gets you ready to see somebody who you trust.
What would your walk-up song be if you had one?
Oh goodness, you know, I really like Hagen Smith's God's Gonna Cut You Down by Johnny Cash, but I don't think that fits me. I just don't. But I need something cool like that. Like, I don't want a modern song. I need something older. I've been listening to early Drake recently, so maybe I would go with early Drake, but we'll see. I don't know.
There's a difference between a walkout song for a pitcher and a walk-up song for a batter. I think there's a lot of different nuances that go into choosing
and
one.
I think that I like the walkout song. For, like, the pitcher's ones are what sticks with me because you hear the walk-up songs, like, multiple times a game. You only get to, with the walkout songs for the pitchers, you only hear it, you know, a couple. It's a special thing. It's like you know they're coming.
The kids who are playing now, their taste in music is terrible, like, overall, yeah. At least in my opinion. I think if I were a relief pitcher, and especially if I was a closer, I would pick a song that was kind of like one of these stadium anthems that could get everybody singing along. You would make it like this 2.5 minute experience, you know, and get the stadium, you know, the juices flowing, kind of like maybe kind of like in Major League whenever Ricky Vaughn would come out to Wild Thing, you know, something similar to that.
Yeah. So softball is different from baseball, the fact that they can kind of pitch they can pitch a whole lot more. They can just keep
they pitch going. Every day.
Pretty much. And I just back-to-back years, Mary Half had Cold as Ice by Foreigner. And then Chenice Dels had So Fresh, So Clean by Outkast. And those two songs, just the moment they came on, everything was going to be okay for the softball team. It's just, it's funny how it works, like, in that sport, because
I was talking to my wife about this. It's like, so these songs, like, they elicit like memories.
They do.
It's really weird just how that works with baseball.
And it's just, I love, that's one of my favorite parts of the sport. Just, I love the memory, like the association you have with players to songs for the rest of your life. Like, I don't know anything else that, like, you know, you will carry a song association with a certain person.
I've said like that you remember their songs almost as much as you remember their jersey numbers. Like, ask me a player.
Ask you a player?
Ask me a Razorback baseball player.
Chad Spanberger.
Well, you ask me another.
Reynolds. Matt Reynolds?
Yeah, actually, I looked this one up the other day. Let me look here.
Okay, let me throw you another
one. Well, this is not going the way that I'd hoped it would.
Let me throw you another point.
One more try.
Okay,
Strike out.
About to say, you fouled off too.
You throw me a couple of change-ups here.
I got to think a little more recent. Michael Turner.
Well, I just struck out.
Okay.
Well, anyway, the point being, I got that a nasty changeup. With some players, you remembered their walk up music. Well, that was bad. That didn't go anywhere near the way that I thought it would.
About to say, I thought I was throwing you some names that would be easy to remember. I mean, if I'm remembering them.
Okay, so hey, I got to talk about this. I am not a gymnastics person. I can appreciate what gymnastics, what gymnastics. Let me get there.
You did a front flip on your way in here today.
God, no, I didn't. I can appreciate what they do.
Yeah.
I don't understand the scoring. It's just not in my wheelhouse. Everybody has their things that they appreciate, or maybe not appreciate is the right word. Everybody has their things that they're interested in, and then there are things that are outside of our periphery. Gymnastics is outside of mine. I will fully admit it. I can appreciate, though, the fact that they had a big win the other night. At Bud Walton, LSU, number 2 ranked team in the country, reigning national champion, Livy Dunn's in there with her security detail, and they beat LSU on the Bud Walton floor. A lot of people were there. I know you were there. Sydney was there. Start with you, Ethan. Yeah. What was the experience like?
First of all, I knew by just trying to get into Bud Walton, I was like, this is basketball game traffic. This is basketball game parking.
What was the attendance?
It was like 10,000 by the end, which it's funny because basketball is always going to be announced at 19,200.
They can't fit the full 19,000 in there for gymnastics because they can't bring out that lower bowl of seats, right?
Correct. And the thing is, you know, the fact that they had 10,000, like, basketball is always going to be announced full, but it's not always. So you don't actually know the exact number, but it was like a basketball game. I mean, that's the experience trying to get in there. I parked in lot 56 across from Arby's. Like, I had to go all the way down there, like, to get a spot. So it was an awesome environment. They get, like, the whole meet is just, for Arkansas at least, because they're really good on floor, it's like a build-up to them getting on floor. And then whenever they do that, it's just crazy in there. They had like red glow sticks that I said, where have these been for basketball games too? They need these, that, you know, when they were doing introductions, that made it pretty hype in there. And then the fact that they won, like you said, like that you can, like, they didn't even have their best day, and they won because LSU didn't have their best day at all. So it was pretty cool to see how they capitalized on the very last rotation when they went on floor and LSU went on beam. They were trailing going into that, and then LSU had a couple mess ups, and Arkansas's really good on floor, and so they just kind of had a big comeback at the end.
And this is the first year that Arkansas is having their home meets at Bud Walton Arena. They've been at Barnhill for, you know, the duration of the program. The last few years, they've started to have some of their bigger meets at Bud Walton, all kind of in a way just to see, hey, how does this work, with the end goal being that they were going to move gymnastics to Bud Walton. So they'll have every meet at Bud Walton this year. Sydney, you got some thoughts on what you saw Friday night?
Yeah, it was one of those matchups that, one, I think anyone in the gymnastics world knows that LSU is one to beat, them in Oklahoma. But it was like Ethan was saying, they didn't have their best night. I would have liked to have seen the Hogs beat them on their best night, because we dominated floor. So when they went on floor, you know, we were lights out. But LSU surprisingly had some falls that you don't normally, or bobbles that you don't normally see on the beam, from some of their star athletes like Aaliyah Finnegan, as well as Haley Bryant. So that was really surprising. I think if they would have hit their routines, it would have been more competitive towards the end. But the Hogs just went lights out on floor. They had a 49.525, I think that is, on floor. So one of the best in the country. And Frankie Price, one of our top gymnasts, she got 110 from the judges. Ethan, do you remember that?
Yeah, she got 110, and the other one was a 9.9. So they had to settle in the middle at 9.95.
How do they – and this is where I get lost in gymnastics. Like, how does one person see a 10 and the other one sees not?
I know they have a certain starting value. And
this
then,
is and this is where gymnastics loses me. Is that it's so it's based on opinion, like there's not a clear winner and loser, if you know what I mean.
I think some judges are very picky, and you know, like because I am not the person to be explaining gymnastic scoring, but I
well
just,
Sydney
this was, is just what I this is just what I hear.
Sydney was telling me about it earlier this morning.
It's really hard to tell, because sometimes you have a judge that misses something that the other judge sees. And so I agree with you. It is based on opinion. Sometimes I think it's unbiased depending on what team comes in. Because if you ask me, in this Jordan Weber era, there should have already been an Arkansas 10, but we just haven't gotten one. It always seems like it's one judge, never both.
We need to send Sydney to the gymnastics meets. She knows what the heck she's talking about.
Well, certainly. I was learning along the way on Friday, because I was just tracking how each of them have a starting value on these things. And then there's certain things that, you know, a judge can be picky about and take off. And there's things that, like LSU had one athlete who on floor got a 9.1. And I was just sitting here watching her go. I was like, oh, she did great. Apparently she missed an entire, like, something you're supposed to do. I mean,
yeah, she missed part of her leap series.
She missed part of her leap series, and me was just sitting there saying, wow, this is impressive. She's doing these flips, and she missed a whole leap series apparently, and she got a low score. So
I miss my leap series every morning.
But that's the thing though, is they were watching it, and I was watching it on TV, and so everyone saw it. I mean, you guys saw it too and didn't know that she missed something, but I just don't see how a judge missed that.
Yeah. So, and it's crazy because like Arkansas, it's just the way that it was going. They were not having their best night, and then like I said, LSU didn't either. And Arkansas, just the fact that the moment they got like the kind of window of like, oh, you can actually still be in this, and you knew they were going to floor, it like was, in my opinion, just being there, I was like, oh, this is a whole new meet as far as like they can win this.
What this whole segment has taught me is that we need to have Sydney doing our gymnastics analysis now. It's good. It's good. She knows what she's talking about. Next gymnastics meet is going to be Friday night in Norman at OU. OU, always a real powerhouse gymnastics program. It's going to be at 8 o'clock on ESPN2. We appreciate you being with us today. I hope you'll visit our website, wholehogsports.com, throughout the day for the latest news. We'll have some of it today on our website, I'm sure. Back with another podcast tomorrow. Hope to see you then. Have a great day, everyone.